You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler?
I'm the Whistler.
Don't. Not again, please. I can scarcely think now. I won't be able to think at all if you do it again. Please, I couldn't stand it. There just won't be anything left if you do. Please.
Another Saturday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the weird story of Shadow of a Mind. See that man working there in his laboratory? That's Dr. William Richter. He's brilliant. He works hard at his research because he believes he can do more for posterity through research than he could had he continued his regular practice as a surgeon. A brain surgeon. It's good that a doctor can retire from his practice and have a laboratory all his own, with all expenses paid, where he may carry on his experiments. Good also that he can afford an assistant.
Ernest? Ernest?
Yes, doctor?
Come here, will you? Think there's something here you should see?
Certainly, doctor. Yes, doctor? What is it?
This piece of tissue. I've just taken it out of the solution.
Oh, yes, that's the tissue from the monkey's brain.
Yes.
Seems to be alive still.
Yes, the solution has kept it in perfect condition, at least to all outward appearances.
Of course, we can't really tell until it's tried along with undisturbed tissue.
That's right. That's just what we're going to do.
Today? You're going to try it today?
Yes. Remember the little chimpanzee we brought in last week?
Yes.
Prepare him, will you? We'll try the experiment at once.
Oh, it will be wonderful if it works. Wonderful for humanity, I mean.
Well, that's why I'm doing this work, Ernest. Because of the great benefit it will be to mankind if I can find a way to keep tissue living when completely severed from a body.
And then replace it. That will be wonderful.
I don't mind telling you, Ernest, that if this experiment is successful, we will have gone a long way toward proving the feasibility of tissue transplantation. Then there will remain only to try it with larger sections of tissue. Who knows? Perhaps sometime, due to our experiments, man will be able to perform this operation on complete sections of the human brain.
It's a great work you're doing, Doctor.
Yes. Now, prepare the animal, will you?
Yes, Doctor.
Yes. A great work, Doctor. Such a benefit to mankind. And such a benefit to you if it's a success, and to those whom you love.
Come in. Oh, Elaine. Hello, I'm glad to see you.
Oh, I didn't want to disturb you, Father, but I've wonderful news. Terribly important.
Wait a minute. Don't you think you should give me an opportunity to at least say good afternoon to your young man?
Oh, I'm sorry, Father.
How do you do, sir?
Hello, John. And now, Elaine, what is this news that is so vital?
Well, it's about John and me. That's why I brought John along. We're going to be married.
We came to ask your permission, sir.
You are in love?
Oh, yes, Father.
Very much, sir.
Oh, at least that's what you think now.
But, Father...
Oh, I know. I know love hits you hard when you're young. I just want you to be sure, my dear. You see, This comes as rather a surprise to me.
A surprise?
Yes, a surprise, and I might say a slight disappointment.
Disappointment?
Yes, I'd hoped you'd finish your school and then come here to help me.
Oh, I know how you feel about your work, Father. I know how important it is to you. It's important to me, too. I want you to continue it, but... Well, I don't want to give up love simply to assist you. Don't you see, it's your work, not mine. Marriage is what I want.
Yes. How soon do you wish to marry?
As soon as possible, sir.
Then I can only tell you that I advise strongly against it. As you know, Elaine, I cannot order you not to marry this man.
No, Father, you've been wonderful to me. I want to repay your kindness. And I think I can do so better if I'm leading a happy, normal life.
I hope you're right, Elaine. I can still only advise against this marriage. If you do it, you will do so against my will and judgment.
The specimen is ready, Doctor.
Huh? Oh, thank you, Ernest. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'm in the midst of a rather important experiment.
Just a moment, Father. If there's something about John to which you object, I think it's only fair that you should tell us now.
Oh, my objection has nothing to do with John. I admire him. I've always considered him a brilliant young man.
Oh, thank you, sir.
If I wished you to marry anyone at this time, I should assume it were John as anyone else.
Then why? What is it, Father?
It is simply my wish that you do not marry at this time. You see, my dear, I'm not young. And the thought of losing you perhaps makes me slightly selfish about you. I only ask that you consider my request. I do not demand that you obey it. Oh, I'm talking too much. I must go. Think it over. Carefully.
Oh, I'm sorry, Johnny. I had no idea he'd behave this way about it. I thought he'd be glad. He's always been so nice to me. I thought, of course, he'd be happy to see me married.
Well, he didn't seem much concerned over your happiness. He seemed more interested in the effect your marriage was going to have on him or his works.
But if I were happy, you'd think he would be. I don't see how marrying you could have any adverse effect on him.
I wonder.
Several days have passed during which John has thought about it. Wondered why the doctor doesn't want his daughter to marry. Thought and searched for a reason, and he's found that reason. But he hasn't told Elaine, not until he has another talk with the doctor privately. John and Elaine are driving along the twisting highway to her home.
Why on earth did your father ever have his laboratory in such an out-of-the-way place?
Oh, he works a lot with animals. They might disturb people if he had close neighbors.
Yes, I suppose so. Looks as though he might have picked a straighter road.
Johnny, why are you so certain that you can convince Father our marriage is the right thing?
Well, the only reason he objected was because of what it might do to him. I know what that was. And I can assure him that the result of our marriage won't be what he feared.
But why won't you tell me?
Oh, now, darling, don't you worry about that. Here, give me a kiss.
Oh, Johnny, Johnny, look out! The bridge! Look out! We're going over!
Careless, John. You needn't have had that wreck if you'd been watching. Even in your haste to settle things with the doctor, you should have been more careful. More careful with the life of the woman you loved. Now her father works feverishly trying to bring her to.
Will she?
Quiet. Looks pretty bad. I'm afraid it's a concussion.
Yes, but will she?
I suppose you are satisfied now. Should have forbidden her seeing you rather than suggesting it would be better for her not to marry you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I wouldn't have had her hurt for the world.
Then why did you insist on going out?
I love her.
Oh.
I do love her. And I hope she loves me. If she's still willing, I'm going to marry her just as soon as she's able.
Well, looks as though it would be some time before she's even able to discuss such a matter.
But she will be all right, won't she? I mean later. You'll do all you can now, won't you?
She's my daughter. I shall do anything in my power to help her. However, I shall undertake it because I want her to get well, not because you do.
Oh, I know how you feel about me. I came here to tell you that our marriage would make no difference in your plans. But that's not important now. The only thing of importance is her recovery. I want you to know if there's anything I can do, you can count on me.
What you can do probably will not be much. However, we shall see.
Not much you could do, John. If you'd only realized then just how much you would do, maybe you wouldn't have been so anxious. It hasn't been pleasant, though, has it, all these days of waiting? Waiting while Elaine came out of her coma and then lapsed back in again. And when the doctor operated on her, that was hard on you, too. These short visits you've been allowed with her. Does it seem strange that the doctor won't let you stay too long in the room with her?
You'll have to leave now, John. Remember, I told you you could only have a few minutes.
Oh, yes, all right. I'll come again soon, Elaine. And don't you worry. Everything will be all right.
Goodbye, John. I hope you can come again soon.
What does he mean, everything would be all right?
Oh, just about us.
Well, what does he know about it? What does he know about your condition?
He thinks, as I do, that I'll soon be well.
Oh, does he?
Yes. Won't I?
We shall see. What else did he tell you?
That he loved me enough to give up anything in the world for me.
And are you still as much in love with him as you were?
Oh, yes, Father. More so.
Then I want you to tell him that you will marry him.
Oh, Father, you... Oh, Father, I knew you'd see. I knew you'd want me to be happy. I knew you'd see what was best.
Yes. Yes, I do see what's best. Probably better than you.
Well, what do you mean?
Elaine, you know how much you've always meant to me.
Yes, you've always been very good to me, Father.
Then believe me when I tell you I know what's best for you. Tell John you will marry him right away.
But why so soon?
Because it is important.
But your attitude has changed so... Have you grown to like him?
Oh, I've scarcely seen him.
But then what's the reason for this sudden reversal of your feelings?
I was looking at it before from the standpoint of an ordinary marriage with the average benefits and drawbacks. But now, my dear, we must look at it differently.
I don't understand.
This will be no ordinary marriage, Elaine. It will be a marriage in which you alone will benefit.
I don't understand.
Oh, my dear, I would rather do anything in the world than to tell you what I have to, but your accident, well, it left... Well, you're just not improving satisfactorily.
What do you mean?
A growth has started where I removed that clot. I've got to operate again, and I cannot say how successful I'll be.
You mean you're afraid it won't be a success? And that's why you want me to marry John?
Yes, because I know what may happen if it isn't. And I want you to have all the things you want while you have the chance.
But that wouldn't be fair to him.
He's always said he would give up everything. Well, now he will have the chance.
Oh, no. I won't do it that way. I wanted to marry him because I thought we'd have a happy life together. I don't want him to do all the giving.
You've got to, Elaine.
No.
But you are going to need him, Elaine. Need him more than you can possibly imagine. Things are, John. She told me how much you love her, and now's your chance to prove it.
Oh, Elaine, the poor girl. It's awful.
Oh, there's not a thing I can do except try and prolong the final outcome. She may go on for years this way, but someday she will crack and her mind will become a complete blank. She's going to need somebody then. Somebody that loves her as much as you say you do.
No, there's no question about that. Of course I love her.
And you will still marry her after what I've told you?
Well, yes, of course. That can't make me love her any less.
Then you will try and convince her that it is best that she marry you.
Yes, I will. Because, you see, regardless of what you think, I do think it's best. I always have.
I think so, too. Now.
Don't you see, darling, this can't make any difference in my love for you. Simply that you've got to undergo another operation.
Yes, but Father said he couldn't be certain how it would turn out.
I think he's pretty certain.
He told you then?
Yes.
And it doesn't really make any difference?
Except that I've waited longer. And now I love you more.
Oh, John.
So please, darling, say you'll marry me.
You still think it's wise?
Yes, I know it is.
All right, John. I'll marry you.
When? How soon?
Anytime you say, John.
It's good to know that someone loves you enough to marry you even when you're ill, isn't it, Elaine? Only you don't know what John knows. You think you have a chance, but John knows better. The doctor told him. He loves you enough to give up anything, though. Yet he doesn't suspect what he's going to be called upon to do, and neither do you, Elaine. Neither do you, but the doctor knows. He knows what sacrifices both he and John must make for you.
But
Doctor? Doctor, can I speak to you for a moment?
Oh, of course. What do you want?
It's about Elaine. She seems to be getting worse. She's been in a coma every time I've seen her in the last several days.
Yes?
Is she really worse? Do you know what's causing the comas?
I do.
Well, isn't there something you can do, some way to stop them?
I have something in mind. I shall have the opportunity to try it soon.
And you think you can?
We can only hope. Oh, by the way, I may need your help in the morning. I suggest you get a good night's rest.
Well, are you going in to see her now?
Yes.
Then may I go in with you?
You are very nervous tonight. I don't think your presence would be good for her. Besides, I want you to rest. We have quite a task ahead of us in the morning.
Oh, yes, but...
I suggest you go to your room now. Over here, in this envelope are some sleeping powders. Be sure you take them. You'll need a good night's rest.
Yes, but Elaine,
If you will cooperate, I think I can assure you that Elaine will improve rather rapidly from now on. Now, please do as I say.
Well, all right, then. And good night. And please let me know in the morning.
I shall.
Elaine? Elaine, dear, are you awake? Elaine?
Oh, Father.
Wake up, Elaine.
I didn't realize I'd been asleep.
Didn't you?
No, I don't feel as though I'd been asleep, exactly.
Oh, don't worry about that. I want to talk to you.
What about?
Please, my dear, don't let this upset you too much, but I'm afraid we have to operate again. Oh. That is our only way out, otherwise you'll lose your mind.
My mind? Oh, Father.
Easy, Elaine. I told you there's a way out.
Way out?
Yes, you see, I have known for a long time this was going to be necessary. The growth has started again, and it's spreading. And wherever it spread, that part of your brain is dead, so I must remove that part.
But I must trust you, Father. I know if any surgeon can do it, you can.
I can remove it, I am certain of that. The question is, in what condition it will leave you?
What do you mean?
Well, it's too large a part of your brain to leave you, well, entirely the same. It's the part that controls your will. We can't just remove it and leave you that way.
But how?
That is where John and his willingness to sacrifice for you comes in.
I don't understand.
I am going to perform the same operation on John.
But there's nothing wrong with John's brain.
No.
He has a brilliant mind.
I know. That's why we chose him.
We chose him? I don't understand.
I told you once that you were going to need somebody that really loved you. Somebody willing to give up everything for you.
And that's why you wanted me to marry him.
Yes. You see, it was the only way to save my little girl. He seemed like a very intelligent young man. That was important because, you see, I didn't want just anybody's brain taking the place of that part of yours, which I shall remove.
You mean you're going to...
Yes.
Oh, Father, listen to me. I love John. You can't do this thing to him. Oh, let me die. I don't want to live if it means this. Please, Father, listen to me.
I'm probably the only brain surgeon in the world who can do it, and I've prepared well. Everything is ready, including John.
Father, please.
Oh, you mustn't become overwrought, Elaine. Here, I'll just give you this hypodermic. There, and it will quiet you.
Oh, but Father...
Don't you see, my dear? If I succeed in this, it will be just like handing back life to the little girl whom I love.
But if you fail... If you fail, Father...
There's no reason why you should fear any ill effects.
But, John...
I'm perfectly confident that the operation will be a success from John's standpoint as well. But even if I do fail, it will be better than letting you live on without a mind.
Father, you can't do this. You're mad. That's it. You're mad. Father, you're mad. You couldn't dream of such a thing if you weren't.
I not only can dream of it, I'm going to do it. And when it is over, you'll be glad you had a father who was willing to do this for you.
Father...
Quiet, Elaine. Soon the medicine will take effect and you'll be unconscious. And when you waken, a part of John's brain will have taken the place of that part of yours that's deceased.
The operation was a success, a complete success for Elaine. A fine piece of surgery, Doctor. You must feel highly pleased with your ability. A pity this operation can't become a contribution to surgical science. But I doubt that you'd want the world to know. And you, Elaine, you look so different since you've been up and around. Your will seems so strong. And your attitude toward John, what's happened to your love for him?
Elaine, what are you getting ready to do?
I'm going out.
You're going out again?
Yes, do you mind?
Well, I thought maybe you'd stay with me tonight, You were out last night. It's awfully lonesome just sitting here in this room.
Never getting out, never seeing anyone.
You're in no condition to see anyone.
But I'd like to see you, Elaine. When you stay home, I like to see you.
Well, I'm not staying home. I'm not sitting around here spending another dull evening with you.
Suppose I am dull. I can't think. I had something I wanted to tell you. I remembered it this afternoon, something I intended doing before we were married. Oh, I can't remember what it was.
Oh, you can't remember anything. All you can do is sit around and whine.
Oh, why do you talk to me like that, Elaine? You used to love me. I remember you said you loved me once. And I love you, Elaine. I've always loved you. What have I done to make you stop loving me?
Don't you know?
Well, it seems like there was something. Something I did that concerns you, but I don't just remember what it was.
You really don't remember, do you?
No.
I wonder if you ever really knew.
You're very smug about it, Elaine. Is that a normal way to treat a man who gave up so much for you? Oh, but you're not entirely normal anymore, are you? Maybe that's because you're no longer completely Elaine. You have parts of two minds, yours and John's, his will. You couldn't be expected to have completely normal reactions. No, not with two minds.
Elaine, may I come in?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Not at all. What do you want, Father?
Elaine, I hardly know how to say this, but I've got bad news for you.
About
your trouble. Those X-ray pictures we took, they show a return of the growth. We didn't get it all last time.
Is it bad?
Well, it's very small now. If we get it soon enough, we should be safe.
Then you're going to have to operate again.
Yes, if we're to save your mind.
And what about Elaine? What's going to happen to her?
What did you say?
I said... Funny, I don't remember what I said.
Never mind. Do you think John will be agreeable?
Oh, he's agreeable to anything I want. He doesn't seem to do anything of his own volition. Just what I wish him to do.
Then you had better tell him.
All right. John! John, come in here.
He's been a very good husband for you, Elaine.
Yes, hasn't he? Not as husbands go, perhaps, but...
You tell me to come in here, Elaine?
Yes.
Well,
John, do you still love me?
Oh, you know I love you. I always have.
Then you can do something more for me.
Oh, well, that's good. What can I do for you, Elaine?
The same thing. Again.
The same thing? Well, I don't remember. Oh, no. No, I didn't do anything for you. You did something to me. Don't do it again. Not again, please. I can scarcely think now. I won't be able to think at all if you do. I couldn't stand it. There just won't be anything left.
Oh, yes, there will. There will be me. And you love me. Remember, John?
Another good job, Doctor. Another great piece of surgery. No one else could have done it. The first time, taking just the part of John's brain which controlled his will, giving that to Elaine and making her will so strong she cared nothing for anyone but herself. And leaving John so that he'd resist no more. That was well done. And this time, just a little bit more. Only this time you made a mistake, Doctor. This time you took too much of John's brain. This time you took the part that remembers. You took too much, Doctor. And now John is dead. You've given his will to Elaine. And now his memory. And the part of John's mind that remembers... also hates, Doctor.
Come in. Oh, Elaine, my dear. Come in, my child. I didn't expect you so late. Elaine, what are you doing with that gun?
I have something to settle with you, Doctor.
Doc? Why? I don't understand. You have never called me doctor before, Elaine.
It is not Elaine you're dealing with, Doctor.
What do you mean?
This is John. You killed my body, but you put my mind in this body. My will and my memory. This body is Elaine's, but these thoughts are John's.
That is impossible.
Not for you, Doctor. Not for the great brain surgeon. But this time you've gone too far, you and Elaine. You took my mind, only you took too much of it. And now it is no longer Elaine. It is I, John, who controls the actions of this body. And the mind of John hates you for what you did.
I only did it to save my little girl.
But
I
had
only...
you not objected to the marriage in the first place, nothing would ever have happened.
What do you mean?
I remember now. Now John's thoughts remember what it was he found out about your objection to the marriage. That's what we were coming to tell you when we had the accident. John found out about your wife's will.
What?
The money that made it possible for you to continue your work would all go to Elaine when she married.
Oh, but...
You didn't want that, did you, Doctor? Because you weren't her real father.
But I've always loved you as a real father. I've done everything for
you. Excuse me, Doctor. For Elaine. You forget you're dealing with the memory of John. And with his will and his memory in this body, you can see why it's perfectly natural to kill you.
Wait, now listen to me. For a long time, I've known that something went wrong, and I didn't intend it that way, but I have prepared for it. I have a signal bell connected with this room to the laboratory. Ernest has been instructed to come here immediately upon hearing it. Well, I've just rung it. He'll be here in a second. You wouldn't dare to kill me because you'd be convicted as a murderer.
How many times do you think a man can be afraid of death, Doctor?
Oh?
Remember, you've been through the process of killing my body for a long time now. I shall be easier on you. I shall kill you quickly now with this gun.
What is it?
That gun. Stop her.
Good heavens, stand back, Ernest. I have no desire to harm you. He's the only one my memory hates. The only one my will says to kill.
You killed your father.
No, Ernest, I didn't.
But I saw. I stood here and watched you kill him.
Yes, but Elaine didn't pull that trigger, and he was not my father.
I'll call the police.
Stop. Stand over there in that corner. Now throw me the keys to the car. That's it. Now stay here. If you try to follow me, I'll kill you.
And so you've settled scores, haven't you, John? Your mind, together with Elaine's body, have made him pay for his greed. But where are you going? It's really over. Why do you hurry so? Why do you drive so fast? Do you know where you're going? Remember, this is a crooked road. And that bridge ahead, that's where it all started, remember? The wheel. Is something pulling on it? Pulling it off to the left? Pulling harder than you can pull? What could have a hold of it? You're alone. But something is pulling the wheel around, isn't it? Pulling it until... That's really the best way. They couldn't go on with John's mind and thoughts in Elaine's body. And now they're all dead. John, William, and Elaine. John, the innocent victim. Elaine, the guilty accomplice. And William, the great brain surgeon who tried so hard to save Elaine. You think so? Well, what neither of them knew was that there was never anything wrong with Elaine's brain in the first place. Her comas were induced by medicines administered by William in his efforts to convince them that something was wrong with her. Because that way... he'd have a reason for attempting his fiendish experiment in brain surgery. He was a good surgeon. He was too good. But he didn't think his transplantation of brain tissue might also carry with it the will and memory. And when a will as strong as John's combines with the memories he had, well, you could hardly blame him for killing the doctor, could you?
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Tonight's story was written by Dwight Houser and directed by J. Donald Wilson. The Whistler originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next week, same time.
I, the Whistler, will return to tell you another unusual tale. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Have you heard the strange tales of the Whistler? I'm the Whistler.
Please, Paul. Take me away from here. I can't stand this lonely place. I'm frightened. It's too quiet here. If you don't take me away, I'll leave by myself.
Saturday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who've stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the amazing story of House of Fear. In an apartment overlooking New York City, a young man and a young girl stand facing each other. The girl is calm. The young man is tense with anger. The girl is Lana Wallace. The young man, Paul Garson. Silence reigns for a few seconds, then...
What? What did you say, Lana?
I said I was going to be married, Paul.
Married?
Yes, married.
But, Lana, you don't know what you're saying. You're out of your mind.
No, Paul, I'm quite sane.
I thought you were in love with me, that we were going to be married.
In all the months I've known you, you've never said a word about marriage until now.
You knew I was madly in love with you?
Yes, Paul, but there was nothing about marriage.
Oh, please, Lana, please listen to me. You don't know what you're doing. You'll never be happy with anyone else. Now, please think it over. Please wait until you're sure.
I am sure, Paul. I've made up my mind.
Oh, what's the matter with me?
Well, nothing's the matter with you.
Oh, no? There must be something.
Nothing.
Oh, then why change your mind so suddenly?
There's nothing sudden about it. I've known the man I'm going to marry for some time.
Some time? You mean a few days, I suppose.
It doesn't matter.
It does to me. Who is this man?
It doesn't matter.
How does it happen you never told me about him?
I didn't think it was necessary.
Oh, I see. Playing both ends against the middle, eh?
You'd better go, Paul.
Do you love him?
I said you'd better go.
Do you love this man, or is it just a matter of...
Will you leave?
Is it money you're after? Is he some old duck ready to kick off?
Please, you're talking nonsense.
Who is he?
If you insist on knowing, his name is Gregory Hellman.
Gregory Hellman?
Yes.
And who's Gregory Hellman?
He's a manufacturer.
Oh, some old duck you're taking for a ride.
At least he's not as young and stupid as you are.
All right. Go ahead and marry him. But I'll tell you this. You'll be bored with him from the day you marry him.
That's my business.
Oh, what a sap I've been. All this while. What a stupid nitwit.
Goodbye, Paul.
Yeah. That's the way it goes, I suppose. Well, there's no use crying over spilled milk, is there?
No, Paul.
Well, so long, Lana.
Goodbye, Paul.
Oh, I'll run into you one of these days. I'll have one of my shoulders patted especially for you, for crying purposes only. So long, Lana.
Nevertheless, Lana had a mind of her own. A few weeks later, found her married to elderly Gregory Hellman. Now they're on a train following the ceremony on their honeymoon.
Well, my dear, are you happy?
Oh, of course I am, Gregory. I've never been so happy in my life.
You seem a bit solemn.
Do I?
Yes, you've been staring vacantly out the window for half an hour. What are you thinking about?
Nothing. Nothing in particular.
Are you wondering if you've done the right thing?
Oh, no, Gregory, certainly not. I'm really very happy. It's just that...
Just what?
Oh, I don't know, but for some reason there's something about a wedding ceremony that makes me sad.
Sad?
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it seems so much like... Well, like a funeral service.
funeral? Oh, good heavens.
I'm sorry, Gregory. I know that's an awful thing to say.
Oh, come, come, Lana. Stop thinking about it. Cheer up.
Yes, I must get such a thought out of my mind. I must.
Just wait till we get to our honeymoon house. You'll cheer up then.
Yes. Did you buy a place?
Buy? Oh, no, I wouldn't buy a place way down here. It's too far from New York.
You rented it?
Yes, took it for a month.
What is it, a cottage?
Oh, no, it's a villa.
Well, what's it like?
Well, I've never seen it, but I understand it's on a cliff overlooking the sea. Quite secluded and about 8 miles from the town.
How on earth did you happen to rent a place way down here, a place you'd never seen?
Oh, I was looking for an out-of-the-way place, and this agent approached me, and it sounded like the very thing for a quiet honeymoon. No one around, not even servants.
No servants?
No, and I doubt very much if we'd be able to get any. But we'll get along. In fact, I'd prefer it that way.
A villa. Sounds fascinating, doesn't it?
That's why I took it. I'm sure you'll like it, Lana.
Yes, Gregory. I'm sure I will. You're a darling.
You know, I never realized how vacant my life has been the past 10 years. How really lonely I've been since Emma died. No children. No close relations.
No relatives, Gregory?
No. Oh, I think I have a second cousin somewhere.
Well, I'll do my best to make up for those lonely years, Gregory.
I'm sure you will, darling. It's strange. Here I am, 50 years old, and all of a sudden I feel like a youngster again. You think I look 50?
Certainly not. You're very young-looking.
Well, I'll keep up with you, even though I am twice your age. I'm not falling apart yet.
Of course you're not.
You know, I think I'll retire from business. I have plenty now. Why should I go on working like a slave when I can forget everything and enjoy life?
Give up your business?
Yes. We'll find some nice restful spot somewhere and take it easy from now on. What say?
Yes, Gregory. I'd like that. Just the two of us.
All right, darling. It's a deal.
And so, 2 weeks go by. 2 lazy weeks. Happy weeks for Gregory. He lolls about the villa, reading and sleeping, having the time of his life. But Lana, being so much younger, is at times somewhat bored. However, she's most tolerant with her elderly husband and does her best to be satisfied with his idea of happiness. Then early one morning, Gregory flies up to New York and returns in the evening.
Well, Lana,
I'm back.
Gregory, so soon? I didn't really expect you this early.
No? Well, it's a quick trip by plane. Good weather all the way.
How did you find things at the office?
Oh, running along as though I'd never left the place.
That's good.
Well, the business will have to run without me from now on, darling.
Without you?
That's right. I'm through with it.
You mean you're not going back?
Nope. I've sold out to another firm.
Gregory, you don't mean it.
I do mean it. It didn't take an hour. I had several good offers, so I took the best one. Closed the deal, signed the papers, and said goodbye to the whole thing.
Well, and what are you going to do now?
Oh, I don't know. Take it easy. Travel around as much as we can. Look for a place to settle down. Maybe a farm or a ranch. You'd like that, Lana.
A farm?
Well, it doesn't have to be a farm. Just some place where I can putter about with a few flowers and maybe a little garden.
Putter about?
Oh, we'll find a place and we'll keep going till we do.
Gregory?
Yes, dear?
What's wrong with this place?
This place?
Well, yes, it's secluded. There's plenty of ground for you to grow things and putter about. Why not this place?
Well, I hadn't thought about this villa, but I suppose it would be all right.
I'm sure it would be the very thing. You may travel the country over and never find another spot so nice as this.
Well, maybe not. Do you like it here?
Yes, I like the quiet and the sea. It's very restful.
Well, maybe it isn't for sale.
You could find out.
You sure you'd like to stay here?
Yes, Gregory, I'm sure I would.
Well, then I'll see the local agent in the morning.
Yes, Gregory.
Oh, by the way, aren't you driving in tomorrow to the hairdresser's?
Yes.
Well, then why don't you see the agent?
I? But I wouldn't know how to handle it.
Oh, of course you would. If the place is for sale, take an option on it. And perhaps it would be best to lease it for a year with an option to purchase. That's simple enough.
I don't know what the place is worth.
Well, offer him $75,000, but if it comes to a showdown, I'd be willing to pay $100,000. There's a lot of land here.
Very well, I'll talk to him. Who owns the villa?
Oh, I don't know. It's part of a huge estate. I don't think anyone lived here very much.
You know, at first I was depressed here. There seemed to be something about this villa that made me feel so alone. Sort of melancholy feeling. But it's apparently worn off, and I'd like to own the place.
Well, then we will, by all means.
What did you tell your associates at the office?
Oh, I just said so long that they probably wouldn't see me again for a long time because I was just going to travel around the country for a while.
That's good. At least you won't have your mind on business from now on.
Nope, nothing but rest and putter about in the sun.
Well, dinner's ready, if you are.
I'm famished, darling.
Mrs. Hellman, the villa is for sale. It's been up for sale for quite a spell.
What do they ask?
They haven't set a price. What do you offer?
$75,000?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's somewhat in line. I think that would be accepted.
Where's the owner? How soon could you contact him?
Well, that's trouble. I don't know where he is just now. Been running around all over the country. Why don't you take an option?
Well, I'd rather lease the place for a year with an option to buy at any time.
Fair enough. Lease for a year and an option to buy. I'll make out the lease and the option. You better put up 10% on the option. That'd be $7,500.
Very well. I'll give you a check.
Good. I'm sure this will go through because the owner wants to get rid of the place. Hasn't been here in 2 years.
Why does the owner want to get rid of it?
Oh, I don't know. It has too many other places, I guess. Well, it's yours for a year anyway.
You feel confident he'll accept.
I know he will. Don't you worry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Blodgett.
Thank you. This will make me a nice commission. I've been trying to sell the villa for several years, and this is the first offer I've had.
I see.
Just take a few minutes, Mrs. Hellman, to draw up the papers.
Then 6 months passed by. 6 months during which Lana became more and more bored with her elderly husband and his puttering about in the garden. There were harsh words about it, and so they closed the villa. Gregory left, and Lana took a plane for Mexico City. And there she ran into, of all people, young Paul Garson.
Why, Lana, what on earth are you doing in Mexico City?
Oh, nothing in particular.
Well, I'm certainly glad to see you.
Are you, Paul?
Yes. And now I guess now is the time to apologize for the way I acted when you ditched me.
You don't need to apologize, Paul. I wish I had listened to you.
What? Didn't your marriage work out right?
No.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, I just couldn't stand it any longer. I was bored within an inch of my life, so I up and left him.
Left him?
Well, no, not exactly that. He left me, too. We just left each other. He went away, and I came down here.
Well, why down here?
To get a divorce.
Oh, Lana, a divorce? Did you get it?
I did.
What happened to your husband?
I don't know. He was notified, but he didn't contest. He didn't even answer the charges.
Incompatibility?
Yes.
Did you ask for a property settlement?
No.
Well, why not?
Well, because he'd already signed over half his cash assets to me and several other articles, so I felt that was enough to take care of me for a long while. I just couldn't go on, Paul. I just couldn't.
No.
He was so much older than I. He was ready to settle down in an armchair and sit the rest of his life away. I just couldn't do that.
I understand, dear. You're wide awake, Lana. You're just starting. I know how it must have been.
Oh, he was nice enough, but I just couldn't go on. I just couldn't be 50.
Lana, dear, can you forgive me for saying the things I did?
Yes, Paul.
I was so much in love with you that, well, I thought I couldn't live without you.
But you have, Paul, haven't you?
No, Lana. No, I haven't. I've banged around all over this hemisphere since you turned me down, and I haven't been happy one single moment.
Haven't you, Paul?
No, dear. No, not until this very moment.
Oh, I'm sorry. So sorry. I made a big mistake.
You did?
Yes. I should have married you.
Then why didn't you?
Well, I'll tell you. This is a confession. As a child, I lived in poverty. Everything I had was a hand-me-down. My father never earned his salt. My mother was always in need, so I made up my mind that love wasn't worth it, that I would sacrifice love for the things I felt I deserved.
So you turned me down for this man, Hellman, because he could give you the things you've always wanted?
Yes.
Well, how did you know that I couldn't have given you those things?
How did I know you could? You didn't indicate that.
Oh, I took you to cheap little cafes. I was apparently penny-pitching, but it wasn't necessary.
What?
No. Why, every girl I knew was after me for my money. That's why when I found you, I acted as though I didn't have an extra dollar. I never dreamed it was money you wanted.
Oh, I loved you, Paul. I still do. But I made up my mind that I wouldn't marry a poor man. Understand?
Yes, Alana, I understand. And I sympathize with you. I see now what it must have meant to you. But I have money, Alana, plenty of money. I admire you for your sacrifice you made.
You do understand, really?
Yes, I do. You still love me?
Yes, Paul.
Then why not marry me?
Well, no reason. I'd love to, if you still want me.
Oh, wonderful, darling. We'll be married as soon as possible.
We can be married tomorrow.
Then tomorrow it is, darling.
Yes, Paul.
And where shall we go for a honeymoon? Where would you like to go, Lana?
Oh, I don't care. Anywhere. I'll leave that up to you.
All right, darling. I know just the place. You'll love it.
Cuba?
No, not Cuba, but quite like it.
Wherever you say, Paul.
Oh, darling, I feel as though I've been born all over again. I feel like a new man. I'm happy.
Oh, Paul, what a fool I've been. I should have known better.
Oh, from now on, darling, I'll see to it that your life is filled with surprises. Never a single monotonous moment.
Yes, Paul.
So Paul and Lana are married and set forth on their honeymoon. Paul owns a lovely place by the sea, and there he takes Lana. But from the night they arrive, Lana has been ill. Some strange malady has come upon her. Just what, no one seems to know. A doctor stands beside her bed as Paul slips into the room.
How is she, Doctor?
Still the same. I haven't the slightest idea what's wrong with her, but I've just given her a sedative.
Do you suppose it's the climate?
Oh, it could be. Semi-tropical here.
Yes.
Well, there's nothing more I can do, so I'll run along now.
Yes, and thank you, Doctor. Lana. Lana.
Oh, Paul.
Lana, dear, what is it? What's wrong with you? Why don't you tell me?
Well, I don't know what it is. I'm just sad. I want to cry all the time. I can't help it.
Cry?
Yes, ever since I've been here, I've wanted to cry.
But why, darling?
I don't know, but I can't help it.
Don't you like it here?
I don't know, Paul. I don't know what it is. I'm afraid.
Afraid of what?
I don't know. Nothing in particular, but I'm afraid.
You mean you'd rather leave here?
Yes, Paul, I don't want to stay here.
But this is such a nice, quiet place, dear. It's so restful. Where could you go that would be better for you?
I don't know, but I'd rather leave.
Why?
I don't know why.
But there must be a reason, darling.
I'm frightened here. I hear things.
You hear things? What things?
Strange sounds. Noises.
I've heard nothing strange.
I have. I hear them all night, and at times I've seen things.
What things?
Things, and I won't stay here another day.
Oh, Lana, I think you're just hysterical. You're letting your imagination run away with
you. I'm not. I'm sick, terribly sick.
But the doctor doesn't know what's wrong with you.
Please, Paul, please take me away from here. I don't like this lonely old place. I've always been frightened of being lonely. That's what it is. It's too quiet here, too alone. If you don't take me away, I'll leave by myself.
Now, don't get yourself so excited.
Please.
The doctor has given you a sedative, dear. Now go to sleep. You'll be all right in the morning. And then we'll take a walk over to the estate. Now, please, darling, please try to sleep, Lana.
All right, Paul. I'll try.
Well, Lana, apparently you are allergic to big houses. Big, silent houses. You felt somewhat like this once before when you were with Gregory. Remember? That house made you feel sad and melancholy. Now the night has passed, and the morning has come. Paul has a visitor in the library.
I've been trying for many months to get in touch with you, Mr. Garson. I heard you left the States.
Yes, I was in Mexico City.
I was surprised to learn you were back here.
Oh, why surprise?
Well, although no one's been living here for several months, a party holds a lease on the place.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep, they took an option to buy it.
They did?
Yes, sir. So you can see that you're sort of trespassing.
Oh. Well, no one is being inconvenienced.
Not exactly.
What did the party offer for the place?
$75,000.
Well, that's fair enough, but I don't want to sell.
What?
No, I've changed my mind. I want to keep the place.
Keep it? But Mr. Garson, I have practically made the deal.
Well, you can call it off. Oh, did the party make a deposit?
Yes.
Then return the deposit with my apologies.
But I've worked hard for 2 years and more trying to sell this place, and now you back down on it.
Well, what would your commission have been?
Well, $3,750.
Very well, I'll give you the $3,750, but call off the deal. I'd prefer to retain ownership.
Yes, of course. Thank you very much, Mr. Garson. That's mighty kind of you.
Paul.
Yes, dear.
Paul, what is that hammering? What is that noise?
Hammering, my dear? Why, that's the workman.
Workman?
Yes, I'm having the place completely renovated, darling. From the garret to the cellar and all for you. Oh, you'll love it when it's finished.
I see.
You should be in bed, darling.
Well, yes, Paul, the hammering made me so nervous, I wondered what it was. I'll run along. Sorry to disturb you.
Well, Mr. Blodgett, I think that you'd better... Mr. Blodgett?
What?
Well, what's wrong with you, sir? You're as white as a sheet, Dan. Are you ill?
Who is that woman?
Why, that's my wife.
Your wife?
Yes.
Well, how long have you known her?
Oh, for a long time, several years now.
I see.
What are you trying to say?
Mr. Garson, I don't understand it. But that is the woman who wants to buy this house.
What? Do you know what you're talking about?
She is the one who took a lease and an option to buy.
Oh, you must be out of your head. My wife.
That woman lived here for 7 months with her husband.
With her lived here?
Yes, sir. And they closed the place up and she came to me and said they were leaving for a while, but to go ahead with the deal.
Are you sure?
Yes.
What was the woman's name?
Mrs. Gregory Hellman.
I see. Well, you'd better run along now, Mr. Blodgett. I'll see you in a day or so.
Oh, yes, sir, of course. Good day, sir.
Yes, good day, Mr. Blodgett. Lana, what are you doing?
I'm packing. If you won't take me away from here, I'll go alone.
But, Lana, why should you leave?
I won't stay here another minute.
Why not, darling? Why not?
I don't know. I have no real reason, but I just don't like it here, and I won't stay.
I don't understand you, Lana.
It doesn't matter. I'm leaving now.
All right. All right, Lana. If you insist, you may go.
Sorry, Paul, but I...
Yes?
Oh, Mr. Garson. Mr. Garson.
Yes. What is it?
We've been working in the cellar.
Yes?
You better come down there, Mr. Garson.
Why?
We just uncovered a body. Buried
a
in
body?
The... Yes, buried in the cellar floor. A
body?
You better stay here, Lana. I'll not be long.
Yes, Paul. Yes.
Paul accompanies the workman to the cellar, examines the body buried in the dirt floor, calls the police, and several hours later is talking with a detective in the living room.
Well, there's no doubt about it. It's the body of Gregory Hellman.
Oh, no. No.
What do you mean, no?
Well, it can't be. How could it be?
Mr. Blodgett, you were the agent for this estate. Did you ever rent this house to Mr. Hellman?
Why,
Go ahead, Blodgett. Go ahead. Tell the truth.
No, I didn't. I never saw Mr. Hellman. The house was rented by another agent in New York. But it was rented to Gregory Hellman.
You never saw Mr. Hellman?
No. But,
But what? Go ahead, Blodgett.
I knew Mrs. Hellman.
Mrs. Hellman? Where is she?
That woman is Mrs. Hellman.
This woman? But I thought she was Mrs. Garson.
She used to be Mrs. Hellman. She came to me and wanted to buy the place. Took a year's lease with an option to buy and made a substantial deposit.
That right?
Yes, that's true. I did. I was Mrs. Hellman, but I was divorced in Mexico.
Divorced? Why did you get a divorce?
Because Mr. Hellman and I decided to separate. We couldn't get along together. He said he was going to New York. I left first and went to Mexico.
Are you sure you left here first?
Well, yes, of course I'm sure.
Why did you try to buy the place?
Well, because my husband, Mr. Hellman, asked me to.
Why didn't he attend to it?
Well, I don't know. He asked me to see to it.
Did you get part of the estate through this Mexican divorce?
No, Mr. Hellman had given me considerable cash and property before that.
Are you telling the truth, Mama? Are you?
Yes.
I don't believe you.
From the day you arrived here, you wanted to leave. You became ill. You said the place depressed you, frightened you.
Paul.
Now I know why. Why you were so upset. Why you wanted to get away. Because of what was buried in the cellar.
No, Paul, no.
You told me yourself that you were bored, that you couldn't stand him any longer. Then you went to Mexico. He was dead when you divorced him. No wonder he couldn't contest the case.
Paul. Paul, please, please listen. I don't know who killed him.
What did you say?
I don't know who did it.
Then you admit he was murdered.
Well, I didn't say that.
You know he was murdered. You just admitted that.
Yes. Yeah, yes, but I didn't do it. I didn't.
Well, lady, you might as well tell the rest of it.
Yes. Yes, but I... Well, I found him dead in his room.
In his room? Then who buried him in the cellar?
I did.
You did. Why? Why didn't you call the police?
Because I was afraid. Afraid they'd think I did it.
Well, why would you be afraid of that?
Because of... Well, if they found out about me.
Found out what?
My record.
Well, Mrs. Hellman, or Garson, we know all about your record.
Record? What do you mean, record?
She served a term in the state penitentiary for...
Tell him, I swear I didn't. I buried him. I admit that. That's why I wanted to buy the place. But I didn't kill him. I didn't.
I think you did. That's why you wanted to leave here.
Oh, please. Please believe me. I wanted to buy the place so no one would ever come here. So no one would ever know. But I didn't kill him. I swear.
I'm sorry, Lana, but I don't believe you.
Mr. Garson, where did you meet this woman?
In Mexico City.
Really? Didn't know her before then?
What?
You heard me.
Oh.
You didn't know her before she married Hellman?
Why, yes.
You know her? What are you stalling about?
Well, Yes, I did know her.
That's what I thought. And you were in love with her. Wanted her to marry you. But she turned you down for Hellman.
What are you talking about?
Well?
Are you trying to accuse me of killing Hellman?
It's possible. You had a motive.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I didn't even know the man.
Murphy.
Oh, yeah?
What did you find out about Paul Garson?
Well, his financial affairs weren't in any too good a condition. He's been trying to dispose of a lot of white elephants like this villa.
I see. Well, do you know what I think, Mr. Garson? I think you and Miss Lana Wallace know what this is all about. I think you're in this together. So I'm going to take you down and book you both on a charge of murder.
And that's just what the officer did. Booked Lana and Paul on a charge of murder. And the case came up for trial. And Lana was convicted. And so was Paul. Yes, Paul was convicted as an accomplice. The evidence piled up against them. Lana admitted that she buried Hellman's body, but denied that she killed him. Paul couldn't prove where he was when Hellman was murdered, and so he was convicted as an accomplice, an accessory. Poor Lana. Poor Paul. They are now awaiting execution in the state penitentiary. But don't feel too badly about them, because I know the truth. I know what really happened. When Paul learned that Lana was marrying Hellman, he arranged for an agent to contact him and offer his villa for a honeymoon house. Paul himself killed Hellman, hoping to have the blame placed on Lana. But when nothing was heard of Hellman's death, Paul followed Lana to Mexico City and enticed her back to the villa to find out what had become of Hellman's body. And he found out, much to his sorrow. CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Next week, same time,
I, The Whistler, will return to tell you another unusual tale. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. Check out all our storytelling shows at crypticcountypodcasts.com.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.